Heading into our last hour here on Coast to Coast AM, I'm just loving the calls going in all sorts of different directions, and I don't see any reason why that needs to stop. We do have one more fun space bumper on the way, referring to a planet, so to speak. Let's all say for now. Who knows what comes up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. I'm working on, and I'd love to get, I mean, we have two guests tomorrow night talking for 3 hours about this new book called Narco. And it's a history of the drug trade written by somebody who was on the inside, who now liaises with the United States government. The book is written with another author, commonly, right, as told to kind of a deal, but that as told to author is also an expert on music. And I'm thinking it'd be kind of fun to get that guest on separately for the first hour and then bring on the narco guy and keep everybody on together, assuming I'm not wearing out a guest by having him on ball for 4 hours. But hey, I do it. It's not that hard. I could only do it because of all the great help we get on open lines, though. And we'll get back to your contributions next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So just freshly refreshing my screen leads me to Brian on a wild card line in Washington State on Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, Ian. This is a blessing. And I was looking at the clock, and it's my favorite number, 111. So
there you go. Isn't that cool?
Yeah,
I love that.
So cool. And
of course, it's 3:11 on my time, so just remember that.
That's right. Yep. I got the Pacific Northwest time.
That's totally cool.
I just want to say thank you for PhD in journalism, and your intelligence shines through. And I did have one question. I know there's so many people that want to talk to you.
Sure.
I had a question on George the Lightning, you know, George Norrie, of course. And let's see, what else did I have to say before that? Oh, I'm so blessed to be on this show a few times this year, to say the least. And my New Year's resolution, I haven't really looked that far in your guys' schedule, but to maybe talk to Nicholas Pope one of these times on Coast to Coast AM.
And that'd be interesting.
My question about George Norrie is, I mean, he seems like he has the busiest schedule in the world. And I was wondering, does he listen to this live every time, like when he's not working and you guys are taking over doing an awesome job? Or does he actually just get some sleep and listen to it the next day?
let me say two things. I'll say two things on that. A, I hope he's getting some sleep because it's well earned. B, I sometimes hope he's not listening because I don't think he would have loved that Deep Purple bumper last hour. I think Space Truckin' probably would have gone on just a titch too long for him as a bumper, but I couldn't resist it. So, yeah, sometimes, you know, when Dad's not here and it's a Friday night, we all have...
saying that you can kind of do what you want and grind a little deeper, and that the way you said that was perfect earlier.
Yeah. Well, he really is that generous. And as busy as he is, if I ever text him or send him an email, I hear back almost instantaneously. So, that doesn't take anything away from his schedule because he's always flying somewhere. Thanks, Brian. We'll go to Terry in Kansas on Coast to Coast AM. Terry?
Hello, Ian. It's nice to talk to you.
And you, whereabouts in Kansas are you?
I am north of Kansas City, about 75, 80 miles.
Okay.
I'm on the Nebraska border.
Yeah, you are.
And I just wanted to ask you something.
Sure.
You had a guest on there one time. It was either you or George Knapp that had the guest. I'm not really sure which one. But it was about a hole in Nevada that they had found. And they lowered a sheet down inside this hole. And
thinking about Mel's hole?
Is that what? He said when they brought the sheep up, it was like it was kicked on the inside, but the wool was left clean.
Okay, so I don't know the sheep story, but Mel's Hole was in Washington State. I do think, no, that's got to be what you're thinking of. But it wasn't Nevada. It was in Washington. And they did lower some kind of animal in there. Yeah.
Well, he said they beat on the side of this hole, and it really didn't make any noise of any kind, even though it seemed like it was metal.
Huh. I'd have to go back and listen to it. The Mel's Hole show was referenced by a previous caller, too, and that was in the late 90s. I was not on the show yet. It was Art Bell. Knapp was a guest maybe by that point, but he wasn't hosting on the show. I remember listening to it as a listener. I remember listening to it as a listener in the late 90s going, okay, this is great radio.
This was about a year or a year and a half or so ago that I heard it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I could be wrong on that. Well, that was the famous Mel's Hole saga started in the late 90s. I'll say that. But maybe somebody else will remember better, and I can get an update for you before the end of this hour. And, of course, there's always Coast Insider. And I'm pretty sure that that's one of those classic shows in the Art Bell vault that you're going to find on Coast Insider. So I would look for that. If you don't have a subscription, it's not hard to get one and sample it. But that would be one of those shows I think you can find, because it is one that, you know, it was just, it marks time for people. That's how significant it's almost the Mel's Hole show on Coast to Coast was a little bit like the War of the Worlds from the Mercury Theater of the Air with Orson Welles. People will remember where they were. I'm not sure about the year, but I remember where I was when I heard it, and it was awesome. But pleasure talking with you nonetheless, and it's always fun to talk to somebody who has legacy with this show and a fellow Kansan. Rick is west of the Rockies in San Jose on Coast to Coast. Rick?
Hey, Ian.
Hey.
Hey, I got a couple of different questions for you. Two are about two interviews you did. I never got to hear the ending of them, so I was wondering. First was soybeans. What was your take on soybeans? Was that stuff good for you or not good for you?
My girlfriend's
always into the health stuff. So
right, yeah. No, I think that by and large, yeah, good for you. I think there was. There's some concern about on the processing of them, not the beans themselves. How about that?
Okay.
So it depends what they're made into, I think.
Okay. That was an easy question. The other one was an interview you did with the guy that does the Jesus Christ show in L.A. What was your take on that? Because I listen to that guy as often as I can whenever I'm driving down there. And I love his show.
Oh, yeah. I it's the Jesus show, and I am such a fan, so I can't ever say anything bad about that. I mean, tell me what you love about it, because I'd be curious, without me filtering any more than that.
He's a lot like you. He's very well-prepared. When somebody calls in, it doesn't matter what the question is, he has a great answer. And
he's
always very knowledgeable about every question. And his topics are great, and the callers are great. And it's just a really, really nice show.
Yeah. So
I was wondering what your
name is. Neil Saavedra.
Yes.
One of the nicest guys in the business. One of the best dressed guys in the business. He was effectively wearing a pork pie hat before I had seen it catch on around the rest of the country. And between the pork pie and his blues mark, he made me look hipper just sitting with him at restaurants whenever I'd be in LA. which is a trick because I never look hip. Yeah, and so the Jesus Christ show is it's just one of those beautiful things. And I didn't understand the pushback on it, but I know some people get really touchy about a lot of stuff. But I think his answers are so thoughtful that they defy, I think they're kind of bulletproof to criticism.
They are. They are. Yeah. To me, it feels like you're actually sitting there talking to Jesus Christ, asking the man the question, and he just like, here it is, dude.
Yep.
You know, it's just as simple.
I'll tell you something else about Neil. I'll tell a story. So I hadn't talked to him for a while. We don't talk enough. I hope to see him when I get to LA coming up. But I will say that every time I had to ask him for a favor on something, and I hadn't spoken to him in a while, but he was just the right guy to help out somebody that I knew. He was just right there. And it was just like, it was like we were just driving around East LA the day before, you know, it was just like, we were just, and that's what I just always love about him. So yeah, you pick a good one to love, because Neil Saavedra and the Jesus Christ Show, I think, is worthy. And if people don't know it, they can find it on the website. They can listen to it on their local premier stations. It's still going on. It's been going on since 2008. And we perhaps never more than now do we need a show like that where people can ask really good questions and get great answers. Pete is in North Carolina on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Pete?
Mr. Punnin, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, I want your take on this. You were talking about potential robot slavery in the future.
Yep.
Check this out, Ian. Did you know that in Japan for the last couple of years they've actually got robot brothels? Now, two things.
That's
how would they keep the patrons from falling in love with the girls?
Right.
And number two, now here's the kicker. They've actually passed a law. You can marry one of these robots. Now, the only thing I can see in that, if you and your old lady got in a fight, you could shut her off and reprogram her.
Well, yes, and I would never suggest that to an actual human being, but it'd be like marrying your toaster in some respects, right? You just unplug your toaster. I think this is a seminal question to what I was trying to get at with our guest, Martin Ford, in the first couple of hours, that I think our relationship to artificial intelligence is way ahead of how we are actually conceptualizing it and having conversations. Everything sounds like it's on the fringe for now, but yesterday's heresies are today's orthodoxies, and I just don't think that it's going to be long before we're going to see a lot more regulation about how artificial intelligence can be treated if we continue to make them serve human-like functions in our life. That doesn't mean that, you know, killing a robot consort, right? Some prostitute that's a robo-stute or something, that should be treated any differently than if one were going out to destroy a Xerox machine with a baseball bat, like in Office Space. But I feel like that's what we're going to, those are questions similar to what we are going to have to deal with, and I don't think we're there yet, and nobody's leading that conversation. So everything's going to be looked upon as really fringy and kind of silly until it's there, and then we're going to have to deal with it. Whatever that is, whatever that turns out to be. Joe is space trucking in Montana on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Hello there. I'd have to agree with the previous caller and say that you're one of my favorite guest hosts. And I really appreciate your pushback and drawing people out. But what I wanted to say was, it was kind of in the vein of the AI thing, that, you know, I'm a truck driver, and you know, they talk about the self-driving trucks,
Right.
And I really don't see how that could ever work, how a robot could ever drive a truck. And especially when it comes to bad weather conditions and icy roads and things, because as other truck drivers who are listening right now will know, when you're driving on ice, you don't use your, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 part of your brain. You feel.
Sure.
You know, you feel the road, and I don't think a computer could do that.
Well, okay. So first of all, let's great premise. Let's go there because you'll be much more of an expert on this than me. When we talk about a self-driving truck, we're not talking about robots per se. In a self-driving truck, the whole truck is going to essentially be the robot, right? The entire truck.
And I use robot generic.
No, it's great. It's a fair point. I just want to make sure we're clear because there are other types of devices that people are talking about that would essentially sit behind a steering wheel, manipulate a steering wheel. I don't think that's what they're talking about here. And part of the idea of a self-driving truck is it's going to run off GPS, it's going to run off weather satellites, and it would know its own limitations differently than a human being. So you might, if we looked at it like a children's story, I could imagine a time when it's going to be almost like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Like when the icy storm hits, you'd need a human behind the wheel to get the truck through, right?
Yeah.
Because the AI wouldn't be able to calculate all of those intangibles that a human being might.
Yeah.
So I could see that. And I don't think, and that's part of it, is I don't think we're looking at a full replacement. I think for any of these things, that's a long way off. But for a straight shot, you know, in a down roads that are going to be designed for that type of trucking, that are going to go right from the harbor directly to something, to some other truck redistribution center. I mean, I think that's really what much more we're talking about, not where you're going to be driving a truck along windy roads necessarily or in and out of city streets.
Yeah. And, you know, also, too, there is a certain amount of automation in new trucks coming off the line right now. They got radar and stuff to keep you in your lane, and someone will even take over from, you know, the steering wheel from you if you go into a slide or something.
Right.
And
I mean, we could even think about anti-lock brakes as being like smart tech that a previous generation, well, maybe now two generations of truckers ago, would have said, "What, you wuss? Don't you know how to drive a truck when to keep your brakes from locking up? You know, you weenies today have these anti-lock brakes. We never had that, and we never you crashed." You know what I mean? So, I mean, I think that's part of that mindset that needs readjustment. And I don't know. It's all going to come down to money, right? That these the truck makers that are doing this robotic research are going to put a lot of money into it, not because they want to eliminate people from those positions, but because they want more trucks on the road, and they may create like whole separate lanes just for AI trucks.
Yeah, and that's possible, which kind of brings me to my main point, which would be, I think that if it ever came down to, well, let me first say that, yeah, I think that there are some self-driving trucks that could do a better job than some truck drivers that maybe shouldn't be on the road anyway.
Right.
But if it came down to a company deciding between hiring me with who I have some experience or, you know, getting a self-driving truck, I feel confident in my ability to compete with a computer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I as of right now, I share that same feeling about both you and also how long it will be until you have an automated deep fake radio host who could host their own show, until they write a program where AI people could answer questions better than I can. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Let's pick it up with Mary, who's in New Jersey on a wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM. Mary?
Oh, hi. I'm trying to remember my childhood. It's coming back to me. Is that because I'm getting older and older and I'm thinking back in my childhood?
Yes. And you want to know why? There's truth to this. The earliest memories we have are the ones that are the hardest to get rid of. Somebody told me that when I was doing a couple rounds as a chaplain intern in hospitals, and even people that were suffering from dementia can remember things that they learned in Sunday school when they were children. And those were the things they couldn't necessarily remember the names of their own kids, but they could sing a hymn word for word that they remembered learning when they learned their catechism.
I have a lot of little stories popping up in my head, and I don't know if they make sense, but here's an odd one. I don't know if I'm like lost or what, but I'm with Saddam Hussein, and he's behind his desk, and we're talking. My father's there, and before my father showed up, like Saddam Hussein has shown me all around his kingdom, and he's shown me all these like instruments of cruelty. And he showed me one like a mummy case, and he shuts the door, and it's all nails and all that.
Yeah, Iron Maiden.
And he's proud of it, right? And then he says, "Well, what's your mother's name and all?" I said, "Well, it's a German name." He said, "I like Germans." All right. So then, it's strange, right? So then he says, "I want to give her a gift after my father shows up." And he says, "What would you like?" And I said, "Well, the next time you paint your country, would you please use the color blue? That's my favorite color. Would you paint as many things blue as you can?" That's strange. And then it's like Bush, the elder Bush. Mm-hmm. He got credit for finding me, but my father really found me. So that's a strange thought.
Yeah, that is strange. Well, I appreciate that. And there's elements of truth to that, of course. You remember Iraq had a very profound relationship with Nazi Germany at one point. And so maybe that's something that you had filed away in your brain at some point. Rich is in San Francisco on Coast to Coast AM on a wild card line. Rich? Rich, you still there, bud? We pass on to Rich in Washington State because, you know, the rich just get richer. Rich in Washington State, how about you? He's gone too. Wow, we've lost all our riches. We are we're poor because we have no riches. We'll go to Justin in Denver on Coast to Coast AM. Justin,
hey, what's going on? Good to talk to you.
And to you.
Man, it's been a great show so far. I think the AI deal is pretty funny. I think anybody who's in a job that's, I wouldn't say low skill, but in a job where a robot feasibly can do it, like Teslas are driving themselves, that's going to take over everything. We're going to lose millions of jobs. But anyways, what I wanted to talk to you tonight is I had an interesting experience with my brother tonight. I was scrolling on Instagram, and I ended up seeing this video that was talking about a high-level Masonic figure and how they worship Lucifer. And I talked to my brother, who's a theologist, and he ended up talking about how Lucifer is the light. And he asked me, and I grew up Catholic. I've been Catholic for a long time, kind of straight away after the whole diddly-diddle with the priest. But anyways, he started asking me, what did Lucifer get kicked out of heaven for? And I think it was for being, you know, jealous, for wanting to be more powerful and all this. And we kind of got on this track of, you know, God brought down all these plagues and everything. What would have Lucifer done if he had control? It was an interesting conversation. I wanted to see your take on it.
Well, remember that the concept of Lucifer is one which goes back to Roman mythology. So it becomes appropriated within Christian theology, and it does become a name which is used synonymously with the devil. But there's Lucifer just meant light bringer, right?
Right.
And so we still use various forms of Lucifer, like Lux, you know, it's just another variation from the Latin for light. And I mean, going even back to the Greeks, he was considered a god, and the concept of Lucifer as a fallen angel, that's a little more convoluted. It's something which is simplified for people, but that fall from heaven thing, that actually goes back, even predates Christianity or even a biblical reference of the falling star of Lucifer, the falling light. So, I mean, I think that goes back to the Canaanites. So in that way, do you have a more specific question about how you relate Lucifer in a modern context?
Well, I try to think of it as I'm a very open-minded person. And when I think about, you know, Lucifer, I always think about something very evil and negative. And he kind of just brought light to me that, you know, hey, like, you know, God did just bring, he brought down these plagues on the people, which it was a very jealous thing to do. And being an all-powerful being, it's an interesting thing that he is all good, all light, omnipresent, all this, but he did bring down all these plagues. So I'm trying to just...
Good. So now you're, this is a very salient question. So when you're talking about God as the person who was bringing justice to the Egyptians until they let go the children of Israel, and therefore the plagues were brought upon them. Remember this, there were pleas and this pleading had gone on for quite a long time. We're not talking about days, we're talking about years, for Pharaoh to let the children of Israel go. And, you know, Pharaoh kept waffling on it. And so according to the biblical record, after a certain while, having been given every opportunity to repent, then the plagues start. So it isn't that it was just like a whim, and it's part of what's interesting about the Moses story. This I wrote about this in a book which came out a couple of years ago called How Millennials Can Get Us Out of the Mess We're In. And we used Moses as a model for leadership. And we address this question pretty openly. So we don't sugarcoat it, my co-authors and I. And I think that is one of those things when you look at other people that died in the march toward Israel, again, it's over years. And having been given many years of opportunity to turn themselves around, just simply chose not to. And whether they died as a direct result of God pointing some lightning, you know, producing finger at them and killing them, or whether they died as a result of a sinful lifestyle that brought about their, you know, demise, these are open questions to debate. Does that help at all?
Yeah, that really helps. I appreciate your insight. What's the book called?
The book I wrote with a rabbi and with a Muslim scholar, so we all share our different perspectives on the Moses story as a leadership model, and it's called How Millennials Can Get Us Out of the Mess We're In. And I think that especially because the Quran has some very different perspectives on God as a killer, and whereas Judaism and Christianity are much more comfortable with that idea, the Quran isn't, and the Quran sort of has God pulling some punches, and the contrast is in the book. I think you'll find it interesting because it models to us different ways that we can approach leadership in our own life as well, and especially for people perhaps like yourself being younger than me, because you're going to take over this whole damn planet coming up soon, so you better get it together because we're counting on you. And maybe that'll help. Enjoyed our conversation, Justin. Carl is in Ontario on Coast to Coast AM on the international line. Carl?
Hello. God bless you. Like in Matthew, like the whole chapter in the book of Matthew is about prophecy, and it talks about the image which causes desolation in verse 15, and a lot of prophecy experts think the image could be actually computerized. Like 30 years ago, they were saying that. Or I'm thinking that'll be something AI. So
when you well, 30 years ago, we were supposed to be dead by now. So I'm not sure that those are the experts you want to reference, because they've been wrong a lot. Yeah, you're talking about the mini apocalypse, I'm guessing, it sometimes called.
They rebuild the temple, and he sets up his image in the temple.
Yeah.
The Antichrist, the beast in the future.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I know people keep trying to, I'm going to use this word, I'm not saying you are. I think a lot of people see a profit, financial profit in it, to be a profit, and they pound current events into a biblical mold and try to make it seem like, oh, now this is what the Bible was talking about. Bottom line is the long history of prophets in this country are in the red. And most people who are prophets, or self-styled prophets anyway, just get it wrong over and over and over again while they're cashing checks. And the people that were predicting the computers would be our downfall all said this back around, you know, this was going to happen in the year 2000. So, you know, I don't put much stock in that type of interpretation. But it is an interesting conversation, especially to have over a cup of coffee. Sherry's in Medford, Oregon, the spiritual home of Coast to Coast on Coast to Coast AM. Go ahead, Sherry.
It's so great to talk to you. I hope to goodness gracious that you take over for whomever.
I know, no, that's never going to happen. I never want to take over. I'm so happy doing what I'm doing, and there's no reason to say that.
Years ago on Jeopardy, they had a computer compete with the human.
Right.
I think it was Watson or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was the worst show I've ever seen, because Watson, hands down, won every. He was up to like 40 or 50 grand. You know, by the first 5 minute commercial. I mean, it was
funny.
Really bad. It was like, you know, so here's my point. My point is this. I went to a 3-day lecture to hear that we are machines. We are the sum total of our experiences that we cannot get over and that get triggered every time we turn around. And with the GMO, the sky being sprayed, who knows what is out there, hybridization, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's really, really scary now, and I don't even want to venture out my door.
Well, you can't do that. You got to do that. You can't become, I mean, that this is, the whole point is always to hold things in tension. So when we become imbalanced like that, that's only on us. Now, I'm with you, by the way, on that Jeopardy series was really boring, because I think some of our beauty is in our imperfections. And it's what makes games fun to watch, because if you just looked at them on a computer readout, there'd be no reason to play the games. But when you play them, things happen and, you know, heroes rise from zeros. And I think that that's kind of the fun thing about being a human. So I'm with you on that. But don't get so freaked out that you don't end up being able to enjoy life. It's there for us. It's low-hanging fruit, right? And so please, whatever you do and wherever you are, enjoy the weather, even if it's bad. Get out and see a sunrise. Don't forget the little miracles that wait for us all the time in life. And especially in the season of miracles, whether or not you're, you know, religious or not, you can still enjoy the fact that there's an adjustment that comes during the holiday season. And hopefully more and more people will think differently, if only for just a period of time. And they'll be more generous and they'll be more forgiving and they'll be more hopeful in a new year. I get another shot at this coming up tomorrow night. Maybe I'll get it right then. Tomorrow night, Narco. And I'll turn you to the website for the rest of that. Had a great time tonight. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Tom. And for everybody else, until tomorrow night, Deus Te Amat. And I do too.